the end. Lights flickered on, I begin to play that song, the one I've played for many years. It's ringing in my ears. Look up to the orange sky, greedy seagulls flying by, cutting through the orange glow. Like a fish cuts through the snow, as orange as that lassie's face. What a disgrace, she shouldn't go out wearing that. Those high heel shoes, she's gonna lose her balance. One more vodka.
My boss,
yeah. Just a rubber linny. She's up in on a tenny, a ten special pair.
He's a fag off, damn it.
Was a kid we boy, his favorite toy was mommy's shiny. You said you couldn't understand why daddy's hands would always grab your finger. He sung to the boy, you're only human. Your friend, I. On the steps are sitting heads on pretty clean, their bottle feds walking like a flock of crows. For what God only knows, they can have a grunted tune, bringing everybody down, drinking buckfast, smoking hash.
Hold you, buckfast, piece of ass.
Was a good wee boy, his favorite toy was mommy shiny. please her. It's no difficult to please her. If you just sing a song for her, she'll buy you a fish supper. And it's true, she likes the bevy. She can be a wee bit heavy, but when the banter starts, she'll say, here's my hand and here's my heart. Aye.
That was the John Langan Band and Streets of Glasgow from their album Bones of Contention. I really love that band. I've never come across them before. I met a couple of the three. There's only three of them. They make a really fantastic noise. I love the fact that all of their tunes are really different from each other. They have a feeling of oldness about them. I'm going to play one a bit later called Old Jimmy, which it's got an even finer lyric and tune to it. It sounds like a song that belongs to the bones of the earth itself. I also love the fact that you can hear the Scottish voice there. We hear so many dialect speakers, as it were, singing with mostly an American, sometimes an English voice. I really love hearing John's Scots voice. The words for all of the songs come in a nice little booklet with the album, so you can get to know them a lot better than might otherwise be easily done. And they're very poetic lyrics, as most of you'll know. I love a song with a good lyric, especially a stroppy one. That particular one describes several characters from the streets of Glasgow and seems somehow to be describing the character of Glasgow itself. I have actually been there, though not for long, as you know. Hi there, all you Scots out there. The song before that, as I said, was Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra, although they weren't at the Fire in the Mountain Festival, their current promoter was. It was the title track from their CD, Money Isn't Everything, and we'll be playing two or three more tunes by them, and you will without doubt hear all of the tunes from that album over the next 3 weeks, I reckon. So, perhaps it's time to go and have a look at some more pictures now. So, if you go back to your... Go back to your slide viewer on the TNS chat box. I think just below the chat box there, somebody very kindly put in a link into the Scotland is Free chat box as well. You could do that again for anybody that wants it. That'd be great. The last time we looked at it, we were at picture 5, which is labelled Mary Lloyd, and there's a picture of a horse's skeletal head on top of a rather shroud-like body, and whole all-round weird experience. I shall probably be looking into that to talk a little bit more about it, because it sounds like a very interesting ritual or celebration or whatever it is. The next slide is called number 6, and it's the Trad Academy. We did have a few pictures that we haven't managed to get off another camera for this, because we can't find the lead to attach it to the computer. Like, we just can't find many things nowadays. It's one of the areas, it's the area that I was my main job during the festival, once we'd finished the rigging and before the de-rigging. It was mine and Synchro's job, with Ed Hicks, to look after this area. Ed is the man, he's the linchpin for this particular bit of it. He was responsible for organising the years, organising the curriculum that went on in there, and the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. He's also a completely wicked banjo player. He performed in Owl's World later on in the show with his band, the Nightcaps. And we'll be hearing a little bit from them later. That was recorded on the voice recorder, partly because, due to an error, an oversight really, I didn't realise that I could have had all the stuff off the back of the desk from Owl's World as well. But unfortunately, apparently nobody wanted it, so it wasn't backed up and it all went away. But it does have to be said that the voice recorder, although it's a slightly murky recording, you will really catch the atmosphere of Owl's World when Ed's doing his banjo thing. But the Trad Academy is a workshop area. It's up in a place called the Wild Camping Area. It's a large sloping field, and I think we had the yurt on about the only flat bit of it. Maybe that's why they call it wild camping, because you're going to be constantly rolling to either one end or one side of your tent. The field itself on the farm is known as the People's Field, apparently, and the lady who owns the farm was really pleased to see people in the People's Field. She also gave a really beautiful short three-sentence speech on the main stage with no notice. Hopefully, when we get the stuff from Paul of Sound, who I notice is in the MSI chat room, and a really big welcome to all the people from Fire in the Mountain who've turned up to to experience this. The yurt itself is a really beautiful thing. It comes from a man that we know in Mid Wales. We keep finding him about the streets, a man called Mike. He's very lovely to work with. And his partner was working as part of the healing area team as well. And if you go to the next picture of the yurt, you will see what it looks like from the inside looking out. We're looking out there to the front of the yurt, where actually on this occasion very little stuff happened in there, because on this rare occasion it didn't rain and nearly everything happened outside. You can see what an absolutely stunning structure it is. Very, very beautiful, intensely geometric, round. It's round itself, of course. It's got a big domed roof with an acoustically live spot in the middle. If you walk into it playing a recorder or speaking, it's kind of muffled until you get into the very centre of the thing. You can see the shadow of the roof over there on the sort of lower right part of the picture. Also, we had a wood burner in there, which we had to use a lot last year, and this year it didn't get lit once. It is at this point this photo was being taken, it's being struck. When we were using it, it had rush mats down in it and had a little pile of wood there just in case we needed it. I love this idea of a yurt with a wood burner in it. Really great. And it meant that the sort of last year, the early morning shows, which were mostly yoga, I think, last year, were the first thing on. It meant that the place could be warmed up by the yurt fairies in advance, so that people could make the cool trip from their own tents to a warm yurt to flex their bodies up for the day ahead. Picture 8 is called Outside the Academy Looking In. So that's a picture taken through the door and looking towards one of the two round open windows in the wall of the yurt. There's no plastic or anything in there. It's just fresh air, and you can sit and peer out. Again, you can see the bright sunshine shining in, making a lovely circle on the floor there. Picture 9 shows the actual, what I call the sky window there. When we're using it, it has got a plastic and canvas cover over it to keep the rain out, which didn't come, but only a fool would not put the rain cover onto a yurt when they're at a festival in Wales. But you can see once again that there's a whole load of very appealing shapes that are built by the form of that big circle. Basically, when you put the yurt up, that circle is, to start with, supported by only 6 of the 52, I think it's 52 in all, wooden struts that finally get to support it. And it's a bit of a tricky business doing that, and it's an even trickier business getting it down. But hey, we've had a bit of practice now. Jess has had loads of practice with yurts. I'm getting better at it. I'd really like one, actually. They're beautiful spaces. Picture 10 shows the Trad Academy curriculum for the Saturday. And for those of you that can't read it, we got yoga at 9 o'clock in the morning. Then I think 2 hours of contact dance, which is it's a very interesting, not something I've tried myself. But I love watching it because it's to do with moving with another's body. It's as much to do with trust as it is to do with dance. And it involves a pair or several bodies working in really close contact with each other, moving around close to the ground. Midday we had a thing called nature naming, which was incredibly popular last year. It was only down on the list for one gig, but it went down so well people really enjoyed the results, because it's not a matter of going around and naming things in nature. It's a matter of spending some time with the people who come to the workshop, or whatever we want to call it. Well, we'll call it a workshop because I'm not sure anybody's come up with a better word, but it doesn't sound as friendly as the events actually are. And the idea is, with that one, with the nature naming, that you spend time with whoever it is that's come along, and you try and work out what it is in nature that they're similar to. And last year, I think everybody got a little wood cookie or a little label with their nature name attached to it. And I was given the name Oak, which I think is a great thing to be named. And it was those little labels last year that meant that there was huge demand for another couple of sessions, if I remember rightly. The spoon carving didn't happen at the Trad Academy, although it still happened under its umbrella, as it were. It happened over near the wood burner stage, which we'll be encountering later on. We'll be seeing a picture of the woodworking tools they had set up in that particular area and the area itself. Jazz improvisation. Now, I really loved, I saw some of these improvisation classes that were being run, because the place was just packed. just packed with astonishing musicians, and there was trumpets and clarinets and flutes and bouzoukis and fiddles and double basses and all manner of instruments, and sometimes a couple of dozen people would turn up to these things. There's a kind of a band, if you like, or an established group of individuals who know enough about what they're doing to not only to be able to play it, but to be able to explain it in really clear terms to other people. Now, I am a bit of a musician. I play the bass, play the recorder, used to play the keyboards as well, but I have never ever got anywhere near being able to improvise. But here was the first place I'd come across you being able to actually sit down and listen to a bunch of people who've never played together, and they were turning out in themselves really astonishing music as they were taught how to do these things. Old Time String Band was another basic learn how to play workshop. Next one at 4 p.m. is called Flat Footing. Now, that's another photograph that unfortunately we're missing, because the doctor last year engaged in all three workshops of Appalachian Flatfoot Dancing, and he engaged in another couple this year. I missed the Sunday one. I can't remember what I was doing, hanging out in a field somewhere. And it's really brilliant. It's a bit hard work in the sunshine, but the idea is that it's solo dancing, so you don't have to have a partner, which is great. And the idea is that your dance becomes the percussion for whatever tune it is that's being played. And for the Saturday session, we had the aforenamed Ed Hicks playing the banjo to accompany us. It is really amazing having a real musician rather than a CD or something, because they, of course, can play slowly or medium quick or whichever you like. It has to be said that the people who are learning the flat foot dancing tend to speed up really pretty quickly and make it quite difficult to keep up. We were being taught by a lady called Jobo, who it does the calling for a band called Cutter Shine, who frequent regular listeners will have heard me raving about before, because they absolutely kick up a storm in the barnyard. I missed them this year as well, but hopefully I'll get it off the back of the desk. We'll be able to play some of that. And she's really great. I don't know how she manages to do it. She doesn't seem to break a sweat or anything. There was another lady who comes along who's equally as entertaining and beautiful to watch on the Sunday, called Alice. No, not the Alice of Kidnap Alice, another Alice. And what happens is there's a kind of upbeat and a downbeat in this sort of music. If you listen to it, you can hear it. There's the banjo will tend to hit a strong note followed by a weak note, although it happens really, really quickly. And the idea is that on the downbeat or the unemphasized part, you drag your foot backwards and it makes a kind of sliding noise. I think they called it a shug. And then you either bang your toe or your heel on the ground. And the whole thing is made up of banging heels and toes on the ground and shugging. But there's a whole load of what appear to be actually quite simple things to do, but it does very rapidly get to the point where you're not entirely in control of your feet. They seem to be doing the work for you. As I say, we didn't manage to get the two photographs of the good doctor trying this, because they're great action shots of a man really, really concentrating hard. Playing bones, it was felt that the idea of all of these was to get in two words what the workshop was about and not explain too much. It was felt that some of them might be a bit obscure, and I know that Ed wasn't sure that anybody would know what playing bones meant. It sounds like it's some kind of Albion-based castanet or something. It's like a pair of bones that you hold in your hands and you kind of rattle them. So I guess it's like a cross between castanets and spoons, but they used to be made of bones. Apparently they're now made of wood. But as it was, several dozen people turned up for that workshop as well. And that, again, is tremendously rhythmic. Says singing there. I think that would have probably been run, I know last year, the singing workshops were run by Dolly May, the aforementioned kind of head honcho, responsible for really kind of holding the whole thing together, as well as the beautiful songstress with Santa Mozzarella. Then there's a ukulele workshop, followed by folk tunes. We had slightly different curriculum for each day, so there were other things to do, but the spoon carving was on every day and was incredibly popular. I don't think people really necessarily recognise that it takes perhaps a whole day to carve a spoon. So the the man who was working the spoon carving workshops for his drink ticket and his meal token for the day was really working hard. But that's the basic idea of that. I think the next photo, if we're lucky, yeah, the next photo, number 11, is the Gypsy Swing Workshop. And you can see that there's a big circle of people there, all of whom have got instruments. This was one of the, this was another of the highlights for me, was seeing four guys who can really play the Gypsy Swing stuff. We'll be trying to find some of that to play in future shows, because we haven't got any on the list at the moment. But they just straight away started banging out a really, really beautiful upbeat tune. They explained to all of the people listening, who, as I say, were mixtures of guitars and trumpets and clarinets and flutes and stuff, a very, very unlikely collection of instruments. And they explained what key it was in and played the scale to these people, and then explained the, I think it was four or five chords they were using to do the tune. And people joined in to start with to kind of get the hang of it, and there was a lot of them put in a really amazing performance, and then they kind of broke it down a little bit so that they just play the chord once like a kind of thrum, and then somebody would do a bit of a solo, and then they'd play the next chord as a thrum, and the next person would play a solo. And it was great. You can see there's plenty of people sitting around listening to it, and there were actually people dancing to it as well. And all in that gorgeous sunshine, you can see there's more oak trees. As you look across to the back of that picture, there's a steep slope runs down there, though not so steep that you can't get down it. It's got a load of bluebells on it, and it runs down to the stream and looks over the fantastic shower unit that was built for this particular event. Very different from last year's, much more effective. We'll see that a bit later on in the pictures. The next picture 12, is the woodworking area where the man who's doing the spoon carving set himself up. You can see there's a couple of pole lathes there, various other things lying around that you can't see. And from the evidence of all of the sawdust and stuff around the place, you can see that a lot of people had a lot of fun there as well. So that's some idea of the kind of workshops that were going on. I really like that, actually. It's one of the things I love about modern festivals, is that there are many things to do apart from just drink beer and watch bands. And so perhaps even if you're not habitually crewing like I do, I get the feeling I was born to crew. Nowadays, you can probably keep yourself pretty busy, hard at work, each day, every day, doing things and coming out with a few new skills, which again is obviously really grand, isn't it? That you're not just going there to spend gaming tokens and let everybody else do all the work. And again, when you're dealing with people who are running these workshops, they're all extremely friendly, competent people, and it seems to me that they make relationship as much of an art as they do the arts that they're trying to teach people. So again, it becomes part of the human heart of the festival, getting on with the people who want to get on with you. Ah, yes, indeed. Number 13 is entitled Steam Room Heater Input, and this is going to bring us on to the next interview we've got. This was all built by a character called Mark Foster, who will look at the three or four pictures of this particular thing, then listen to him describing it. You can see that what it is it's basically a thing full of wood, which he will describe in detail in the interview, and it's creating a lot of steam. And if you look at slide 14, gone too far there. If you look at slide 14, that's the steam room heater output. What he's got there is he's got a little water reservoir which is feeding a coil, and this whole thing's, that's where all the steam comes out of, where the water goes in and steam comes out. And then if you go to slide 15, you can see the actual the heat source and the little bucket reservoir up there on the top of the slope. And down there, sitting over the stream, is a white geometric structure into which people go and sit. There's half a dozen seats in there, and he pumps steam into the room so that you can sit over the cool stream and have a sauna. Last year we had, as part of the shower unit, we had a straw bale sauna, which I'm told was really, really effective. I'm not a man for steamy places, although I was almost tempted by this one. I know that everybody that went in there said it was really great, but I guess there are people who really like going into hot, steamy places. And the last shot before we listen to a 15-minute or so chat with the man that designed and built it is called Après Steam Room, and you have to look at it a bit carefully. He will explain what these things are, but if you look, you can see there's a kind of swing thing hanging in the foreground of the picture, and then there's a flat thing just over the stream, which is in fact a sunbed, and just beyond that, there's a flat swing with a guy just lying on it over the stream. It's hanging about 5 or 6 inches above the stream, and he's just lying on it, cooling down, which if I was going to go for these things, I suspect is the bit I'd like best. But, you know, I'm not one for really rolling around in the snow and getting myself beaten with birch twigs. There you go, though. We'll come back to the slideshow in a little bit. In the meantime, we'll just see if we can find... Yeah, here we go. In the meantime, here's a discussion, a chat that I had with Mark Foster, the man who was the inspiration and active participant in the building of that particular structure and everything that goes with it, along with his mate, who I think is mentioned in the show, met him as well in the interview. He's a really nice bloke. I think he was called Andy. We'll now listen to the interview and find out whether I'm right. After that, we'll come back with a little bit more tunage.
Going, because that'd be really good. I'll just remind myself of where I am and who I'm talking to, because it can get a bit confusing. So I'm talking to Mark.
Hello, sir. How are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm really enjoying this lovely summer that we're having here. The, you know, the bluebells and the... spring or late sprung, you know, it's wonderful here in North Wales and enjoying this beginning of the season.
Yeah, isn't it? It's a gorgeous spot you've got for yourself here. I see the, your device is up there, lit, fully lit by the evening sun and surrounded by enthusiastic people.
Yes.
What gave you the idea of, before we describe what it is, what inspired you to make it?
It's a friend of mine who asked me to provide a hot water source at a festival that we do called Family Camp. And it's a small group of us and we wanted cooking amenities and perhaps bathing amenities. So he said, can you do something to get hot water? I said, oh, well, yeah. So I thought about this and thought about that, and something I'd seen in the years gone by at Glastonbury and what have you, with triangulated radiators and various implements, the devices used to heat water. And after doing that for some time, then the heat source that we're talking about was at another party where another friend of mine was making a bamboo structure, where he's a basket maker with the Craft Guild. And he makes very traditional Roman stuff and various lightweight structure, and then garden benders and what have you.
Right, yeah.
Seating and, you know, all kinds of... Anyway, I've seen one of his things, and I'm there with my water heater, and I thought to myself, oh, I need a wash. Maybe if I just get my hot water thing and get a bit of steam wrapped around me and put a dust sheet over that bender, I can have a quick wash. And then what happened was, I was in there and it was hot and sweaty and I got a bit of soap, and another mate said, oh, I've got a bucket of water. So then we had a wash, and then I thought, this is the extreme luxury. Steam while camping.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like aspiring to what could be the most extravagant desire whilst you're out there. And, you know, it's also born of a load of rubbish, because it's all made of discarded waste. But it's trying to provide the most exquisite experience of being outdoors and having hot steam wrapped around you.
Yeah, yeah, which seems to be working really well. People are well appreciating it. Do you want to describe the business end? Do you want to describe what the visitor experiences?
Okay. The heat source is a traditional immersion cylinder from household appliance. You'll have one in your cupboard somewhere, and it's probably made of copper. And you've got a switch to power a ring inside it. And this is what I've taken, and I've cut the top off of it to then turn it into a basket receptacle, which I then put on stilts. So I've got like a half washing machine drum being circular about waist height on legs, which has got air holes cut in it, which also encumbers a coil, which is part of the immersion cylinder. So it's just copper, got an internal coil.
Copper coil?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a large drum with a copper coil inside it. Cut the top off the drum, maintain the coil, feed one end of the coil with cold water, support the basket, the drum on legs, so it's all fireproof, and then out of the other end of the coil, providing the heat source is efficient enough, you get either hot water or hot water vapour.
Yeah.
So you can stem the flow of the entry of the coil, therefore making it just hot water if that's what you require.
Yeah.
Hotter water if you require, and eventually what I'm doing is steam, which I then pump into another device, which is a geometric dome, kind of replicating a bit of a dodecahedron.
Yeah.
It's born from a friend of mine's inspiration, where he does the weave thing, and it's bamboo tubes, sections, canes, split into ribbons, and then cleaned so they're tactile for hand use. And then we make a format of those, so like 3 or 4 meter length, and then stitch them together with ribbons of inner tube. Cut an old inner tube into very fine 10 to 15 millimeter strips.
Yeah.
Wrap that, double granny that off. A little bit of an overlap and 3 binds seems to be the way. Make a format of those, then use those to then start your basis for your geometric shape.
Yeah.
Of which you can choose from many.
Yeah, as we discussed earlier.
Yes.
That's really good, though. I love the idea that you can basically, whatever space it is that people are going into, can actually be made of several different geometric shapes. Dodecahedron's a good one to choose, though.
Yes, yes, for the reasons you mentioned.
Yeah, because it's a representation of ether, and all the other elements are made up of ether.
I'll have to investigate that, but I do like your inspiration there.
Yeah.
Because it is one that I have done in the past, amongst others, and the more time you spend with that premeditation of what we're going to do today, what we're going to do today, seems to give the structure its integrity. So, you know, with a bit more research, I'm sure you get a more fine shrine.
Just that, I work a lot with geometry and with human electromagnetic systems. We use kinesiology to show that there's links between electromagnetic energy circuits in the human body directly and those shapes that we're talking about. So I believe that every single one of them, the cube, the octahedron, the tetrahedron, the star tetrahedron we talked about earlier, all of them have an effect on the human energy field, which it is worth building and enabling people to spend time in.
This version we've built this weekend with Andy McCormick, a friend of mine who's come to help me, is a fire in the mountain hedron. Because we've had to combine our efforts and resources and energy to create what we've done today. As you might well see in your slideshow, perhaps your listeners might be interested.
Yeah,
in
indeed,
that.
There are photos of this device. I'll take some more photos.
Got from the heat source, which was the steam basket, the immersion cylinder with a bucket feeding one end of the coil and a tap off of the other end of the coil. And then a pipe into this shape which we've created from the bamboo, which we then wrap in dust sheets and cling film.
Yeah.
And then we got a couple of ply doors to try and represent an airlock, so that you can try and suppress the heat loss.
Yeah.
Because one of the downsides is the frequency of people visiting. It means that some of the punters are asking now if we can have like a 20-minute window.
Yeah.
So we know that we can have 20 minutes of no doors opening.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to get the heat up.
So you let people in every half hour or something like
that. So not that it's a much of a turn thing, but if you want to transit.
How many people can you get in there?
Well, we could get quite more than we have at the moment. We've got 6 chairs.
Yeah.
Everyone's sitting down and getting their feet up. But it would be nice to get some more people in there, because the body's obviously absorbed the space and the heat.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, because the water is so cold, it is nice to get your feet out. So we're limited in how we can encompass that without putting some pallets in there or 2 ton of gravel or something.
So that's just so that people who are listening know, this thing's actually situated over the stream, so that you're in effectively a geometric structure that's covered in dust sheets and then cling film, and it's been filled with steam from the heating device.
Turns into a bit of a conservatory type.
But it has the stream running.
Stained glass window scenario.
Yes, it's actually set up over the stream so that you can put your feet in the cold water at the same time as having this experience. It's quite extraordinary, and there will be photos of it in the slideshow.
I had one punter suggested that it's just like Iceland. It felt like I was at home in my country where this steam is so nice. And another fellow who was with her, her partner, said, oh, I felt I was being abducted because, like, the water's moving under my feet and, like, this bubble and the steam and, like, the water and the movement and, like, the sound. Just the sound.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? Water running past you in one direction and it's never quite the same.
Yes.
So once people have been in there and they've been steamed and they've dipped their feet in the river, what's
steam? We also then have a couple of options, which are, we have a swing for you to drip dry on. So you can take a bit of a long, slow movement through the air. You sit on that and take a bit of breeze wrap around you.
Yeah.
And I have another area, which is the drying table, which is also suspended from a tree on some short straps, so it's a very gentle, abrupt swing. But it's comfortable, so you lay down on there and dry. But it's very close to the level of the water, so you can try and imagine you are in the water, because you're getting an oral stimulation.
The water's running under you because it's over the stream again,
yes,
isn't it?
As close as possible.
Yeah.
And then we got a couple of sunbeds also situated in there.
Yeah.
So you can... The sunbed is just above the level of the water. You can feel the motion in your ears when you get down there.
It's running under your body just a couple of inches away.
So you go in there and get cooked, and you come out and you dry for a little while, and you just suck in the cleansing.
Yeah. And of course, just the noise of the rivers carrying stuff away from you as you open everything up, because it's not just your physical pores, but your energy centres.
And something to do with the ions that occur with the cascading water.
Now that's interesting. That sort of stuff that the trout use to jump 40 feet up a waterfall,
There is something to suggest that there are a magnitude of one specific type of iron which is attractive to us, enabling us to ground ourselves.
Right.
At that point where they're all being generated. Mm. So that the cascading water has a multitude of benefits.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant experience, I reckon. I'll tell you one of the reasons why it caught my eye is because we're going to be living in woodland shortly, which means we'll have no electricity and all that, and it gives us a reason to try lots of new technologies. I'm going to try and talk to the people that are running the rocket stove that's powering the showers, because that's an amazing looking device.
Yes.
But what we want to do is we want to be able, because we're a long way away from water, but we can collect loads of rainwater, so we want to make a distiller. We want to distill rainwater so that we can drink it, and that looks like exactly the device to do that.
That can get it up to vapour, so you can condense it.
Yeah, and then collect it and drink it and use it.
Yeah, so it would have had sterilisation due to having been boiled.
The only criticism, I've seen a lot of things in favour of it, the only criticism I've seen of it is that some of the organic minerals go missing with the inorganic minerals. But it's said that this is great, I love this. You just put 3 or 4 grains of basmati rice at the bottom of a gallon of it or something, and that, and a little bit of salt. Yeah, I think it's half a teaspoon full of salt in a gallon or something, and that basically turns it. So.
And dip your silver coins in, I hear.
We've got silver cloth, colloidal silver making machine will be doing that too.
Yeah.
So that device looks exactly like what we need, really. Because you could put a bigger reservoir on it, couldn't you?
As big a reservoir as you require.
Mm.
But like I say, it being gravity fed, you know, you can quantify the amount of water that's in the coil according to what's in the bucket.
Yeah.
So as long as your reservoir is at that level, doesn't matter what volume is pumping through it, and you boil it off slowly.
Yeah.
And then you can just turn the exit point in 360 degrees in order that you get the steam coming off the top and the condensation coming off the bottom.
Okay, so repeat that to me. I know I've got it on the record, but I'll have it again anyway.
Well, an easy way to separate what comes out of the exit point is to just have a circle in your coil.
Yeah.
So the gas comes out of the top of the point and the not gas, the
water, liquid
falls to the bottom of that, so attaches itself and falls to the bottom, so you can easily separate the two.
So the actual amount of water is determined by basically having your reservoir at the same level as the boiling off point.
Yes.
Exactly, we used to build ponds like that. Ah, oh, brilliant. I understand that. That's excellent, because I was wondering. Yeah. These things don't stick very well with me.
No, it's very... It's trying to be very descriptive. The design is for visual description.
Yeah.
I do a bit of tree surgery, and I once read that the easiest knots are the ones that you can see to be safe.
Yeah.
And then the easiest design is also replicated by that.
Yeah.
When you can understand the physicality of it in a blink, you trust its integrity, you know, like second nature.
Mm.
Which is the reason that's been built, is for you to be able to look at it and go,
And I still say that the most effective things are simple and easy to build. A lot of the solutions we've got to apparently really complicated problems are going to be ever so simple.
Yes.
And, you know, a device like that, you could keep when you're around, you just keep it burning, keep the reservoir topped up, and, it means you can turn out lots and lots of, water to drink. And there's a lot of heat being generated, which I'm sure could be used as well.
Yeah, if I was to put the heat source in the basket, it might make for much more, cozy sauna, but it's the reason it is like that is to try and make steam for comfort.
Yeah, brilliant.
But
Absolutely, certainly, brilliant.
The basket could be much more economic.
Yeah.
But it is a bit extravagant burning up there.
Yeah. And you're just burning wood.
It
looks like it makes it into charcoal on the way through. It looks like it burns really slow but hot.
Yes, and then you collect the charcoal at the bottom and cook with it.
Okay.
It's like a funnel. You see the hole at the bottom there with the bucket?
Yeah, yeah.
You collect the cooking coal.
Right, excellent. So it's dropping little nuggets of charcoal out the bottom as well.
Yeah. And on those road spikes, you shake it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just churns it out for you.
Absolutely brilliant. Really brilliant. Well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate that.
Ben, thank you. Thank you for your interest, and thank you for listening.
I've got your card as well, so I can let you know.
We should not kids.
Mm.
Pleasure.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Really brilliant.
This is Media Streaming International Radio.
We pay taxes on good roads, pay taxes on our schools, taxes for this, taxes for that, then working harder than mules. By skipping we saved a few dollars, and put them in a big bank vault. Something is wrong, cause our money is gone, and it certainly ain't our fault. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the point in working if you're staying dead? Gotta break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. Just why our money's gone bye-bye, nobody seems to explain. Times are hard, ain't it a shame we've got to pay all those taxes again? Our clothes are dirty and ragged, our hearts are burdened with care. The failure of the national banks is surely more than we can bear. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the point in working if we stay in debt? Gonna break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. Yodelay, yeah, yodelay, yeah, yodelay. If banks, they save for us people, why then allow them to run? Big iron balls couldn't break down those walls. Folks, something's gotta be done. Our hard-earned money's gone bye-bye, gone in that big bank crash. We're in a mess, folks, a terrible mess. We've got credit, but we ain't got cash. If you play in water, you're bound to get wet. What's the point in working if you stay in debt? We're gonna break our backs and continue paying tax. Good people, we're a load upset. Good people, we're a load upset. Good people, we're a load upset. You're late.
Listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.com. Thanks to all of you for being out there. That was another track from Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra, who weren't at the Fire in the Mountain Festival, but hopefully they will be at some point in the near future. It was another track called Bank Failures off their Money Isn't Everything CD, and a fantastically applicable lyric, I'm sure you'll all agree. I posted the website address for them, www.teapadorchestra.co.uk, all one word, and there's a tour list up there. We're on June the 6th, so tonight they're playing at the Voodoo Bar in Belfast. Tomorrow night, June the 7th, they're at Wicklow, the Bridge Tavern. Then they're at the Connery Community Hall on the 8th, Crane Lane, Cork on the 9th, St John's Theatre in Listowel on the 10th, Sky and Ground at Wexford on the 11th, and the Magic Garden on the 12th, before heading off for the Isle of Wight Festival on the 13th, at which point they return to the land of Albion across the sea, and we'll cover some of those dates when we play more of their tunes next week. The Teapad Orchestra, I'm certainly going to be getting my ass down there to see them, because I think that is going to be just a fantastic night out. Before them, of course, a track very familiar to all of you, because I play it again and again, Lonesome Road Blues from the absolutely fabulous Kidnap Alice. They're on tour as well at the moment. They left the festival to head over to Ireland as well. And a little bit later on, we'll be playing more of their tunes and posting details of their tour as well. And Kidnap Alice were really the first band, I think, that I ever danced from beginning to end, from the moment they kicked into their first chord. They are absolutely one of my all-time favourites. Before that, we were listening to Mark Foster talking about his Steam Basket means of producing steam and heat out in the open air. One of the things that interested me about it, obviously, is we had quite an extensive chat before the interview about the use of geometry for people to sit in. Again, as regular listeners will know, I do work with the human electromagnetic system and fundamental geometric shapes, and have shown again and again, along with the a bunch of people from the template ceremonies, that there are definite demonstrable connections between these shapes and our energetic bodies. And one of the things I really liked about that, they made a special shape, firing the mountainahedron for this one. But they have in the past experimented with many other things. They made a star tetrahedron for people to sit in, which is of course, not of course, it is an upward pointing tetrahedron and a downward pointing tetrahedron melded in such a way that what you get is a cube formed of 8 perfect tetrahedrons. And it represents, in geometric terms and in energetic terms, the perfect melding of the energetic information of pattern with matter. So it's the mother of form rising to meet the father of consciousness, a really spectacular shape in which to sit and get steamed. We did before discover one in the time, the period we were living at a colour therapy college that I've spoken of before, the Hygieia Colour Therapy College in Gloucester. The man who ran that had in fact built a load of life-size, human-sized platonic forms in the garden of his place, so that for a while people could sit inside a tetrahedron or a cube or an octahedron or an icosahedron or a dodecahedron and see what it felt like. I think the dodecahedron is a particularly spectacular form for that, and it's one that I know that Mark uses, because the other classical elements, earth, air, fire and water, are said to be composed of ether. So to a certain extent, you give yourself the benefit of all four of the material ones by experiencing the energetic basis of the whole thing. Mark's device was especially interesting to me, as you heard there, because we are, Synchro and I, in the process of moving towards spending most of our time in some ancient woodland, which we'll be helping to bring back into productive use by bringing back the hazel coppice, by removing trees that are in the way of other trees to grow. And we're going to get the use of a lot of the wood that's going to come out as a result of that. Quite a lot of it we're going to be planking up and using for building various things and cladding other things. But we will certainly have enough stuff to be able to build exactly the kind of thing that I was showing pictures of there. And the thing is, the water that comes out the tap in that particular wood is really pretty nice, but not everybody's water is quite so good as that. And our water will be a very long way away from where we're living, because it's 25, 30 acre woodland. And what we'd really like to do is gather the rainwater from our roofs and turn it all into distilled water. And the device that has been built there for producing steam can be very easily adapted to produce water, and of course steam as well if we want to. And as I said there, in the process there'll be a lot of heat generated, so we'll have to think quite carefully about where and how we build this thing, because for sure living out there in the open as it is in Wales in the winter, we're bound to be able to use the heat that comes off it as well. There was something else that occurred to me whilst I was saying all of that, but I don't think I can really remember what it was. So what we'll do for the moment is return to the slideshow, if that's all right with you, at the msiradio.com chat room, and have a look at a few more pictures, because I think, if I remember rightly, the next thing that comes up is hopefully, well, it's taken a while, I'm doing all of this manipulation whilst talking, which always confuses me. Oh, and I've had to reload my page, so hear me squeaky mouse button. So we'd got to number 16, which is the Après steam room picture, which enables people, once they've been in the steam room, to lie or swing or hang about generally over the stream. And the stream is literally running 4 or 5 inches underneath wherever it is that you're lying. It obviously runs in one direction, and as mentioned earlier, the sound of running water helps the cleansing of the consciousness after cleansing of the body has been done. And of course, one of the things about being in the steam room is that it opens all your pores and releases some of the toxicity that tends to build up in this modern world. And anyway, the body does turn out, all the cells are little living beings, they've all got to get rid of their rubbish somewhere. And this stuff all has to be gotten out, and sweating is one of the ways we do it. And I think I was talking to one of the healers who was telling me that this is an ideal thing to go and do after you've had a shiatsu massage or something like that, because the massage itself encourages the moving on of energies that need to be moved on, and to then complement that physically by going and sitting in a steam room and then going and lying over the cool running water of a stream is more or less ideal. And as Mark said, and he did ask me to emphasize, the entire thing is made up of scavenged, recycled, junked material. I don't think he had to buy anything to make it. I quite like the idea that it's all covered in dust sheets and cling film as well. There's a mixture of the ancient and the modern there that I find really quite attractive. We move on to track 17. It does indeed, as I hoped, show a picture of the front of the showers. As I said, last year we had a straw bale sauna, which was in the same place as this. It was a very extensive structure. It involved the moving around of a huge amount of material, and it took a lot of people a long time to put it together. It's quite possible that one of the reasons why the coming together of this festival was so much less strenuous, shall we say, was because this particular structure is a lot easier to build and a lot more, I think I gather from talking to people, a lot more effective in what it does. So we separated the sauna. The sauna is what we've just seen over the stream. And what we've got here is, you can see a couple of doors there separated by an upright. So there's a pair of showers. They were being used extensively throughout the festival and afterwards. And this particular rig, it's possible for people to fire it up really quite easily. The next shot, number 18, is a shot up above the shower doors, and it shows a huge tank of, well, two tanks of water up on the top. Think that one of them contains cold water and the other one contains hot water, which is being used in the showers. I didn't look in detail at how it was all mixed and things, but I gather that there is information on how to do this on the internet. And I couldn't find, unfortunately, the people that were responsible for building it. I think they were all busy elsewhere. But if you move on to slide 19, you can see what it is that's powering the whole thing. It's a giant steel rocket stove, basically. We've talked about rocket stoves before. They're another extremely useful thing in terms of being able to turn out lots and lots of heat for very little wood. You can see that the wood that's being fed in there is kind of quite thin, sort of battening. You can put, there's a couple of bigger logs on the bottom, but you can get an enormous amount of heat from wood that really would just shoot up in any kind of normal wood burner. But because of the design of this thing, you can get lots of heat out of what is basically kindling. You need quite big kindling for this one because it's quite a big rocket stove. Out of the back of it, you can see the four hoses that supply the thing. Again, I think two of them are carrying cold water in at the bottom, and the other two are taking hot water out from the top. There's a nice little bit to the design of this, which I think is really important to the way it works, because the next shot, shot 20, gives you a view in through the top of the wood burner, and you can see that buried in there are a couple of radiators. So effectively, you've got points at which you can attach your various hoses. I think the hoses were a pre-assembled thing that were brought along and attached to it all with the wood burner. But that is why I think the thing was capable of turning out, it seemed to me, pretty much an endless stream of hot showers for people. A lot easier to use than the one we had last year. And a great experience. And also, it looks really nice. The whole thing is it's actually built out of scaffolding, and then the clad unit and the roof and everything are built into that. But it's not the scaffolding that you notice when you look at it. It's all of the lovely barked wood and things that we use to dress the overall structure in. The next shot, number 21, is the Barnyard stage, waiting for people to come and play on it. So the music doesn't start particularly early there. There's quite a lot of peace and quiet in the mornings. And the Friday and the Saturday, lots and lots of really kicking tunes, more or less from beginning to end. But they play it all really canny, I think, on Sunday, because Sunday we saw a whole load of basically acoustic acts. There's a lot of Welsh music here, a lot of Welsh spoken. And again, hopefully from Paul of Sound, who's in the MSI chat box tonight, we're going to be able to gain access to some samples of everybody who played on there. The Barnyard itself there looks incredibly civilized. Last year and this year when we arrived, this entire area had been used as a farm, really, and it develops holes in it and all of that, and for health and safety reasons, all of those have to be sort of cemented or plugged one way or the other, and things have to be put down to make sure people do not twist their ankles when they're out there kicking chickens. You'll see that there's a good layer of straw on the ground as well, which I always think that that's a help. The shot's actually taken. There's a little bit of a wall behind me. I think I took the shot actually over the top of the wall. Those weeds are growing in the wall. And the bar is behind us, behind where the camera is. So you can stand in the bar and see all the tunes because you can look straight over the heads of the audience. And the next shot, shot 22, shows what the Barnyard's like when it's got people in it and a band on stage. I can't honestly remember who that was playing. But at several points during the festival, this was a heaving mass of people shouting. Towards the end of the show, I'm going to play Sheena Gigg's last song. We kicked off the show with effectively their encore, a little 2-minute encore. But we're going to play that, which was recorded from the voice recorder. And so you can hear the audience as well as the band. And it really gives you some sense of the atmosphere that's generated in there. The next shot, I think, this is the one that I didn't take myself, because Kidnap Alice had a fairly lonely slot on the bill this time, and so the shots I took of them didn't really do them justice, whereas I think this one does. I got it off their own website, I think. It's a photograph of them playing at a busking festival in Bern, where, talking to them, they had a really cracking time. And you can sort of see the character of the band there. Over on the left-hand side, we've got Hippie Joe, as he's known. He's the mandolin player, absolute demon, and we'll be playing one of his tunes later on. Next to him is Joe Bursky, who is the moving spirit, really, behind the organisation of the Fire in the Mountain Festival, and also behind their Two for Love record label. Again, like I say, I'll probably do actually now is play a couple more Kidnap Alice tunes in a row to go with the picture. You can see Alice herself there, impeccably turned out as ever. And I can't remember the name of the violinist, the bass player and the guitarist, and I haven't got my glasses on, so what have we got? We're going to play a couple of their tunes whilst I find my glasses, and then I can tell you who the rest of the band are. They are highly characterful band. If I have one minor gripe about the whole thing, it was the fact that Kidnap Alice weren't given a slot. I reckon they'd have been absolutely perfect for supporting the John Langan band, because the John Langan band went down a storm. But Kidnap Alice have got such spirit. The whole festival seems to be aware of them, and it would have been really cracking. One of the high spots for me last year was Kidnap Alice's late night slot on the Sunday, which was a really, really wicked dance from beginning to end at the front of the stage, with lots of people handing each other to other people. It really was very, very good fun. But hey, you know, just not a major complaint. I did get to see Kidnap Alice. In fact, I got to saw them a couple of times, because many of these people, the crew bands, as it were, the people who are working to help put the festival together, as well as doing a slot on the stage, also did time at what was called the Woodburner stage eventually, which was completely unplugged, basically. So I'm probably going to play three Kidnap Alice tunes in a row because I really want to, and this is an ideal excuse for playing a lot of their music. And the first one I'm going to play is off the new EP, so it's off the Chalk Hill Blue EP that we heard one off earlier. And talking to Joe about it after the show, he told me that one of the songs, which is called, it's called The Longest Day, and last year, you'll remember that in the Willow Theatre here, we were putting on Twelfth Night, and we took it on a little bit of a tour to some ancient sites, and in the end, on Midsummer's Eve, we brought it back for an extremely midge-ridden and skankingly wet night, so we had to do it rather than in the Willows, we had to do it in the barn. But on that particular occasion, Alice and Joe from Kidnap Alice came along to watch the performance, which was really thrilling for me. It's really childish, really. But also, they came along with Diana, the lady who we saw earlier on, who was running the healing field, and she brought with her, can you remember the name of the lady that owns the farm? Marianne. Marianne came along as well. So we had a bunch of people from the Fire in the Mountain Festival as our own kind of outdoor venue, as it was, when we were playing Shakespeare. And Alice and Joe had a real hell of a time getting here, because I think Alice was coming on the bus or the train from somewhere, and Joe was hacking his way over from Norfolk, and they came through the Brecon Beacons, which is a set of tall hills kind of on the borders, and it's beautiful rolling countryside, really great to look at, but no bloody good at all for mobile signal, it keeps coming and going. So this song is from Kidnap Alice's EP, it's called The Longest Day, and it's actually about Alice and Joe's journey to come and see Midsummer Night's Dream. It'll be followed by Fitz, which is a song written by Hippie Joe, and stands for, apparently we learnt this year, it stands for farting in the sink, and he dedicates that to his mother, shows some of his own versatility on the mandolin. There may be another Kidnap Alice song after that, or perhaps, perhaps another one of Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra, but anyway, this is Kidnap Alice and The Longest Day.
It's been the longest road getting to you. All our soldiers marching on in the hedgerows along to where you are. The dog rose, the foxglove and the fawn. It's been the longest hour getting through to you. It's been a dark and lonely hour just getting through to you. Our telephone lines get crossed from time to time, but our souls just marching on. The dog rose, the fox glove and the fun.
straight from the filthy mind of Hippie Joe from Kidnap Alice, that one, Fits, preceded by The Longest Day. And as I said, Kidnap Alice are also now on tour. It's a little short tour. Tuesday the 11th, they're at Whelan's Bar in Dublin. I've posted kidnapalice.co.uk as the website into the two chat boxes. You can find all of these details on there. So that's Whelan's Bar in Dublin, and really, I do recommend it. Whatever it is they're asking for you to get in there, they are a fine band, and you will have a cracking night out. First time I saw them was at the Secret Garden Party, which was otherwise quite a challenging experience, but I did see them three times there, and saw them practically bring a tent back from the dead. Their first tune, as I've said many times before, there was maybe half dozen or a half people in there. It was the Sunday night, pretty hedonistic gig, so everybody's well shagged out. And they came on stage, and Alice said to them, she said, "You're going to have to dance, you know." And their first tune, I think, is about 2.5 minutes long. And by the time they were halfway through, the tent was absolutely bulging with dancing people. So look out, Whelan's Bar. Here comes some fun. After that, Wednesday the 12th, they're at St. Mary's Church of Ireland in Dungarvan. On the 13th, they're at Roy's in Dub, it looks like it says in Galway. And then they're going to the Westport Bluegrass Festival. Now that'll probably give you, hopefully this show will give you some idea of the kind of class of stuff you're going to see at such a festival. It's very, very difficult to stand still. Monday the 17th, beginning of week after next, they're at Belfast. Before heading off to Scotland, guys, Thursday the 20th, they're in Edinburgh. Then they're at the Insider Festival on the 21st and 22nd at Aviemore before coming back over to Albion and doing Bristol, the Glastonbury Festival, and finally the North Wales Bluegrass Festival in Conwy on the 5th to the 7th of July. Well, I wonder if we'll be able to get enough meaningless promissory tokens together to go to that one. Probably a bit late to apply for a crew position there, but I shall certainly be seeing if I can get my arse down to that one. So there you go, a little bit more Kidnap Alice for you. There will be more of them to come. There'll be more music from this festival in coming weeks as well, as we manage to gather it together. I've had to patch it a bit together, really, from the various CDs that, as I say, I managed to scrounge on my way around, something that I'm getting pretty good at now. Let's return to the slideshow for the moment and see what comes up next there. The last one we were at was slide 23 and a picture of Kidnap Alice at the Burn Busking Festival, having a cracking time. If you go looking for Kidnap Alice pictures, you'll actually find a whole series of slideshows of really great pictures of them playing in various different places. Whilst I remember, I now have my glasses on, and the record label is called Two for Joy, not Two for Love, but Two for Joy will do. We've got Alice Ballantyne on vocals, Joe Hymus, or Hippie Joe, on the mandolin, Jerry Bloom on the fiddle, Joe Bursky on the banjo, Jenny Trilsbach on the double bass, it says here, and Ben Gallen on the guitar. They have, of course, got their EP, Chalk Hill Blue, out, as well as Kidnap Alice's main album, which I've now been playing probably a tune from every week, I should think, for the last kind of couple of years or so. So we move on to number 24, which is slide 25. I see where the confusion arises. This is moving into another area of the festival. You go through a little gateway into this, and it's the main camping area. There's an area for living vehicles and an area for tents, which is disappearing into the distance there. And it gives you some idea of just how beautiful the place is where all of this happens, especially when the sun is shining. I do believe that over beyond those hills is Aberystwyth and the seaside. There were many people who came to the festival having got there in the dead of night and used their sat-navs or travelled through the mountains or whatever, that didn't realise that we're only 3 or 4 miles away from the sea there. Aberystwyth itself is also a pretty kicking place. Being a student town, there's a lot going on there. I don't think it's got a Tesco's yet either, which always keeps... Have you got a Tesco's at Aber? No. No, they haven't made it that far west. So... And this field's got a couple of things in it, several things really worthy of mention. This is where all of the children's stuff happened. Over in the distance somewhere there is the Bardic fire pit, which is where a lot of stuff happened in the dead of night. Behind us is, as is implied by the view from the Moringa Cafe title, a thing called the Moringa Cafe. The food is always, the food is a major challenge because, there is no commercial stuff at this festival. There is nobody selling tat of any sort. And they work very, very hard at trying to get round, the need for burger vans and various other things. It meant that the people that were cooking the food last year were really seriously at the sharp end and didn't have to be core crew to be absolutely and completely tatered by about halfway through. There was a lot of making and mending as it went along, a lot of finding out, and lessons were being learned on the hoof. The main food was coming out of a big white farm building, which, as we were looking at the main stage earlier on, is just to the left, has a substantial crew of volunteers in it, turning out food for the crew, and food for most of the festival as well. I think last year we had about 600 people there, something like that. This year, as I say, they were up to the 1,000, they were up to their limit, maybe a few more, including the crew, who knows. And the Moringa Cafe did an absolutely sterling job. They did two sterling jobs. In fact, one of them was providing the best coffee I think I've ever tasted, in that it all had two shots of coffee in it rather than one. And they had a nice way of presenting things. They took whatever your name was, whatever you wanted to be known as, off you and wrote it on a piece of paper with your order. And then eventually somebody came out and shouted your name and gave you what it was you'd asked for. They were also turning out really, really beautiful baguettes in almost, in many, many different forms. They had to work really hard, more or less from the very beginning of the day to the very end of the day. It's a hard job doing the catering, especially when, you know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the festival, I think somewhere under 300 tickets had been sold. And when you hear that the crew at its peak, they're not all actually on site at the same time, but if you take all the security and all of the stewards and all of the bands and all of the makers and shakers and the linchpins and all the other people, there's something approaching 200 crew travel through the place. Every single one of those is given a meal ticket and a drinks ticket for each day. So that means they're giving away an enormous amount of food and drink as well. If we look at the next picture for the Moringa Cafe, it's a view of the same thing but slightly to the right, where you can see there's a spare tent there. That was a really great kind of like vacant venue, as it were, that we didn't make too much use of this year. But I was talking with Andy Hickey, who was responsible for organising a whole day's worth of Welsh bands to play at Owl's World during the Sunday, and we figured that it'd probably be a really good idea to have some kind of open mic area in there where we can have a bit more speech, a bit more poetry, spoken word, that kind of stuff, and fit in all manner of things. In fact, I loved Andy Hickey. He was one of many people that I met there, and I'm absolutely sure that I will be getting to go to more festivals and working with him, which will expose me to yet more interesting stuff, hopefully, to bring to you in the future. But again, really beautiful horizon there to look out on. And the next shot, which is officially called slide 27, but mine's called slide 26. I mean, seeing how that confusion occurs, I'll make sure I deal with that in future. Here we go. Here's one of the other venues that was there. This is Al's World, run by Al, who is the man who is currently promoting the Rob Heron tour and is responsible for giving me a copy of their CD so I could play so many of their lovely tunes. And that is exactly why they're here, actually why they're in the show, even though they weren't at the festival. They do have a connection. And as I say again, I'm going to keep saying it, because hopefully there's people out there listening. We'll see them actually at the Fire in the Mountain next year, and that'll be another excuse for a really good dance. But in the meantime, this is standing there in front of Owl's World, because we moved out of the tent in the sunshine. We can see Heal the Last Stand, who are they? We heard a track from them earlier. I'll play another one any minute now. And they, I first saw at the Truth Juice Gathering. They really made the character of the gig. So I'm going to play another tune, another one of two. There'll be another one coming up later. I'm going to play off their live at St. Giles Parish Church. It was only recorded 25th of April 2013, so they've really got it together. I'm going to play Soul Shanty, I think. And then we'll come back with a bit more word and a bit more music. Hang on a moment, I haven't got this. What's this? All quite. It will be coming. Here it is. Soul Shanty by Heal the Last Stand. Another really beautiful tune. It's not very often you get to hear quiet music on Dr. Rock, and I'm pretty sure that in the last half hour or hour of the show, I'll have to unleash myself on some of my more usual content. But in the meantime, here's Heal the Last Stand. They performed, as I said, at the Fire in the Mountain Festival, which this is all about. But this is from their... Ooh, it's I guess it's a proper CD, really. It's got 8 tracks on it altogether. I'll put a website into the chat box whilst I'm playing that. And after this, you're going to hear Ed Hicks and the Nightcaps playing live at Owl's World. I think it was probably on the Saturday evening. Whatever it was, very difficult, sort of a bit of a blur. And the thing is with that one is I will be getting some Ed Hicks stuff from the studio. But one of the things I really wanted to try and do in the later phases of this show was to try and give you some idea, as far as you can without any image, of just exactly what it's like in these venues when the crew bands, especially the crew bands, are playing. So it's kind of noisy. But you can hear, I've picked the best ones I've got, you can quite clearly hear all the instrumentation, but most of all you can hear what fun the audience are having. There will be another excerpt from Owl's World later on as we get to hear Santa Mozzarella, because I have managed to finally pick up that track. But in the meantime, here's Heal the Last Stand playing Soul Shanty.
Stars above make heaven shine. And just the other day my soul was saved. I've seen a lot of things, I've seen them twice. And these views, they're gonna stay with me for life. I just can't seem to find a place for me to stay. Like these views inside my head are locked away. Just the other day my soul has slipped. I tried to find it down a dark alleyway. I looked around the bones to a part in the bay. But I listened to friends to hear what they had to say. And I found out it had to search all night and day. And just the other day my soul is dead. I was walking down the road the other night, when I saw a flash that gave me a fright. Well, it was my soul that came back to say hello. And all the other people saw it glow. And just the other day I found my soul. Can't seem to find a place for me to stay. Like these
whiskey's inside my head, I'll knock away. Well, I listen to friends to hear what they had to say. And I found out I'd have to search all night and day. But it was my soul that came back to say hello. Just the other day I found my soul.
Thank you, guys.
Beautiful and perfectly mixed groove that was, with very civilised audience sound in the background. And now we're going to move over to 5 minutes of the genuine rough, but some really sharp chicken kicking blue.
Let me die like a fox on the run. Like a fox. But only a smile upon his face, and his eyes are full of grace. And they say he'll never win, he's took it on the chin. Yet he turns the other cheek, and he sang his song to me. Mountains high, the many times he nearly died for climbing up the highest peaks. With knee shoes upon his feet, he sang of far exotic lands, lotus flower in his hand. He picked it for a maiden fair, with deep dark eyes and long black hair.
Well, you can, so when you're a dying man, you can smile at the door, singing, darling, take me home. And when they are 6 feet down, your friends will not learn, they'll be dancing till the dawn, to sing about how you shone.
And he sang in a foreign tongue, told me about how he got drunk on a marula from the tree, how he danced with monkeys, he sang at tribes in jungles wild, how he got a lass with child, a fear that skewered him with the spear, then he ended up back here.
You've got to do it while you can, so when you're a dying man, you can smile at the door, take down to take home, and when they your friends will not learn, they'll be dancing till the dawn. Sing about how you shone. Oh, 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 my love. Oh, 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 my love.
and old Jimmy's fucked and tired, warms his bones side the fire, bottle of whiskey at his side. He still wanders far and wide. You see, old Jimmy's done it all. His pride'll never fall. He'll be happy when he dies, 'cause he let his spirit fly. You've got to do it while you can, so when you're a dying man, you can smile at the throne, singing, darling, take me home. And when they lower you 6 feet down, your friends will not frown, they'll be dancing till the dawn. They'll sing about how you shun. You've got to do it while you can, so when you're a dying man, you can smile at the throne, singing, darling, take me home. And when they lower you 6 feet down, your friends will not frown, they'll be dancing till the dawn. They'll sing about how you shun.
Rock's radio show here on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. We've got, that was John Langland Band again, and a really fabulous tune called Old Jimmy. And the lyrics are absolutely gorgeous for that one. They really are. I meant to quote them actually at the end of the song, but I haven't bothered to look them up, so I'll perhaps play it again, and because the chorus is... it's just beautiful. The man's as good with the words as he is with the instrumentation. There's no doubt about it. I don't really think I've come across a sort of young songwriter who's doing a job that seems to reach straight to the heart. Everybody I've played it to thinks it's really great as well. So, really fantastic that. There's a lot more great music to come. We're now creeping on to 4 hours in the show. Thanks very much to all of you in the chat boxes and the private messages and stuff for all of the support. Sometimes words fail even me. But there's going to be more Rob Heron and the Teapad Orchestra. There's going to be a beautiful, beautiful song from Hill, The Last Stand. A couple more from Kidnap Alice. The absolutely amazing Santa Mozzarella in a completely riotous and out of control Owl's World. There's another John Langan Band coming up, Midgets on Acid. And, finally we'll get round to Sheila Nagig, who out of all the amazing music that I've played, really, they completely outstrip everybody else for speed and accuracy. Really fantastic they are. So all of that still to come, as well as, what I think is the jewel in the crown of the three interviews for this show, which will be the second interview the Dr. Rock Show has had with the absolutely fabulous Anthony Bayliss, who is the man in charge of security once again for the Fire in the Mountain Festival. And it's really fine to come across a chief of security who has actually got a love in his heart. But before that, we'll have another quick look at maybe not quite the rest of the slideshow. Let me just find my way. It's actually taken quite a lot of concentration to juggle all of these various inputs. If we return to the slideshow, the last one we looked at was Hill, The Last Stand at Owl's World, from which we heard Ed Hicks and the Nightcaps earlier on. As I say, in future shows there will be some studio work from them, which I'm personally looking forward really to hearing. In the meantime, if we move on to the following slide, officially slide 27, but labelled slide 26 by me, because I like to keep you on the hop. And we have a bit of festival art. This is it's called Festival Firebird. It's slide 27, it's called, but it's actually slide 28 according to the slide counter. And it's all made out of basically a kind of like a plywood, but I'm not sure it actually was ply. and it's lots and lots of bits that have been cut into really amazing shapes and then stuck and then suspended on an iron pole, so that you can see the whole thing. I think it's a raven, probably. It looks very much like indigenous pictures of a phoenix. It's a phoenix. Oh, another version of the phoenix, thanks. Jess Synchro is sitting here in the background, acting partly as my memory and to put me straight, which is really great. Thanks, Synchro, for joining me on the Dr. Rock Show. Really appreciate it, mate. Great festival, eh? Shout it out.
Cracking. Absolutely cracking.
The thing with this phoenix is that when we first saw it, its wings were tucked up inside it, so it kind of, they ran down the side of its body and were close up against the structure. If you look closely down the bottom of the pole, you can see that there actually is a large sliding weight there, and the weight was released to let the wings fly, as it were. Slide 29 or 28, depending on which set of numbers you're looking at, is what happened on the end of the Sunday night, I think, actually just before John Langan played. They set a fire underneath this beautiful piece of work, and this slide, Fire in the Mountain, shows a fire in the mountain. The next shot shows what happened next, I think. Yeah, there we go, they had a firework in it as well. So the whole thing went up in flames. It was incredibly warm, which was really great. I think most of the festival, what was left of the festival, had kind of huddled around it. A lot of people went home on the Sunday, forced by the need to earn gaming tokens to leave probably one of the best places that they've been to go back and do something else entirely. But the ones that were left were pretty intent on partying. The photograph that I showed earlier of the Mary Lloyd of the horse's, the skeletal horse's head on top of the shroud was actually taken in the light of the burning phoenix. So the Mary Lloyd was wandering around this fire as well. And we were also treated to several people taking their clothes off, male and female taking their clothes off and, dancing around it. So there's all sorts of exhibitionists at the fire in the mountain and, nobody needed to have been frightened about doing anything. People could do what they liked and they were, it was such a place full of heart, really. And this is it. There you go. There's a bit of a peak there just before the headline band. We got a genuine fire in the mountain and it's a phoenix, a fantastic symbol rising out of the ashes, a whole new form of life, which is exactly what we could see with that, do we see it happening in it, folks, really. Here we go. This is going to be an excuse for another trip to Owl's World with my really, I think the Olympus voice recorder really did quite a remarkable job given it recorded all of the interviews and, several of the bands. I really would like to say that we're going to have some studio work from Santa Mozzarella, but like many of the units that we saw around the place at Fire in the Mountain, they actually only play, it seems to me, live and don't make it into the studio. These guys are a bit like Ed Hicks Band, actually. Ed Hicks Band are very, very cheeky, and they do some really amazing and amusing tunes. They are nothing like a run-of-the-mill bluegrass band, though, as you can hear, they can kick out that as well. And the same is true of Santa Mozzarella. They, I think, the man that's playing the guitar, or is it, he's got his guitar there, but he plays a mandolin as well. He's called Matan. He comes from Rome, as far as I gather. He certainly seems to feel that he does. And the whole Santa Mozzarella thing is basically pretending to be Italian, but it's actually not. Matan is, well, just an astonishing performer, really. We saw him all over the place with different people. He's the man who was playing the guitar and the lute for Ed Hicks's band as well. So there was Ed, the man who helped us, who was responsible for running the yurt, and there's a big shout to Ed, really. He's a great chap to work with, and me and Jess, and I think all of the people in the workshop yurt had a really chill time, and man, I ever seen a better banjo player, apart from maybe Joe Bursky. Well, let's say, you know, Kidnap Alice's banjo player is also well shit hot, and they do occasionally play together as well. There was a jam. This particular photograph of Santa Mozzarella and the next two are taken just in front of where all the woodworking gear was at a kind of impromptu tent called the Woodburner Stage. There's a big fire. The main festival fire is just to the right of the picture, and to the behind where I'm actually taking it from, there are a pair of stone-built pizza ovens that were part of the immense catering effort feeding all of these people. And They were turning out pizza more or less 24 hours a day, as far as I could tell, out of these authentic ovens. And they also, all crewed by crew. One of whom, Ali, who was one of, I think, probably one of the linchpins of the pizza making outfit, came and sang a couple of songs at a jam at the Woodburner stage. I'd never heard him sing before. And what a remarkable and beautiful voice he'd got. But back to Santa Mozzarella. Matan, like I say, played with Ed Hicks's band. That's Dolly May again, the lady that we saw sitting by the stream earlier on, who is basically does all the live admin, pulling it, making sure things come together, a sort of, if you like, a kind of point of focus between all the various linchpins and teams that are attached to them. Dolly is really the linchpin of linchpins, really, and an exceptionally fine job, and a beautiful voice. Really, it's why I wanted to play some Santa Mozzarella, even though it is, it's much rougher than anything else you'll hear on TNS. You can hear the quality of it. I did also record this, which is their acoustic gig, unplugged. But people were talking so much that there's just a lot of mumble behind it. So in the end, the riotous and amplified Owl's World two tunes were the best I could come up with. But I'm definitely sure they're well good enough. But hey guys, if you're listening or you catch the podcast, let's have some studio work. It'd be well worth it. The man playing the accordion is a man called Pete, exemplary accordion player. And also he played the double bass in Ed Hicks and the Nightcaps. So Matan and Ed and Pete play together as a kind of three-piece. The man standing, who's only, you can see his shoulder and his side and his leg, is the double bass player, who is described as a force of nature, which I think is a fair description of him, but unfortunately I didn't catch his name. So hi to you, guy. Hi to the whole Santa Mozzarella, actually. I really love them. And another reason for playing them at Owl's World is you can hear that they are a much loved outfit. I think they got the biggest response I've heard, and I had to actually kind of mix out quite a lot of the crowd noise, because at some point there's so much noise for so long the band had to kind of really wait to get to play another tune. So the next picture, 31, is Santa Mozzarella as well, and this is when they did their encore at their acoustic unplugged gig. Here they are out in, out by the main fire of the festival, which is over at the back left. You can see people sitting around it. And you can see the kind of spirit that they're playing with. They're really dancing. The next one, slide 32/33, shows them once again playing their encore. And, just look at that. There's Matan off the ground. So this has got to be the ideal point, really, to play you, I think it's 5 or 6 minutes of Santa Mozzarella in an extremely noisy Owl's World. And the noise is purely and simply a response to just how loved I think these guys are, throughout the festival, really. So here we go. Santa Mozzarella live at Owl's World, recorded on Dr. Rock's voice recorder. And, that's it.
I forgot to tell her it's a song about prostitutes.
Oh, no, no.
Right, ready?
Tell it to me.
1, 2, 3, and...
La chiamavano bocca di rosa, metteva l'amore, la chiamavano bocca di rosa, metteva l'amore, sopra ogni cosa. Era scesa dalla stazione del paesino di Sant'Ilario, forse in un momento che non si trattava di un missionario. E l'amore lo fa, ma la passione spesso conduce a soddisfare le proprie voglie, senza indagare se il concupito ha il cuore libero per un moglie. E fu così che bocca di rosa senza volerlo si tirò via con mente delle cagnette in cui aveva contratto l'osso marico mare di un paese di rosati. La gente da buoni consumi se tenessi come Gesù in te. Sì, la gente da buoni consumi se non può gridare cattivo se. Di una vecchia ma stata moglie senza mai figli, senza più voglia, vita la figlia di gente in busto, darà tutto il consiglio giusto, rivolgendosi alle condotte, troppo parla di tutto l'amore della figlia,
E quelli andarono dal gendarme e dissero senza parabrasare.
That's a too many clams.
E quelli arrivarono con i gendarmi, con i pennacchi, con i pennacchi. E arrivarono quattro gendarmi con i pennacchi, con le armi. Il cuore tenero. E qui siamo ancora.
Yeah.
the utterly fantastic Santa fucking Mozzarella live at Owl's World from the Fire in the Mountain Festival and recorded on a stereo voice recorder balanced on a bench at the front of the gig. That was really one of the high spots for me. I love those guys. They're brilliant.